It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond. Another great, great show coming up, I promise you. You know why? Because we have Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, dude?
I promise you, not great. Average at best is what you will get from me.
It's going to be below average, but we'll fake it till we make it. We'll fake it till we make it.
At least give you average.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Bubba Rosenbaum, that means you have to be above average, man.
I'll do my best. I'll put my best foot forward, guys.
You got to carry
above average Bubba Rosenbaum.
Above average, yeah. He's overachiever.
Say that a few times fast.
Above average Bubba Rosenbaum. Above average Rubber Bubba. Good God.
The podcast is off to a great start, but what do you know? It's three great guys, and I tell you what, I'm very excited. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about, believe it or not. And we're going to save, we got some big announcements, but you'll have to listen to the end of the podcast to find out what that's about. And thank you for all the great new listeners we have, all the listens we have. Plus, a lot of people are going to Facebook, adding, I saw a new page likes there. Thank you very much. And Twitter.
YouTube has been, you know, that's really where a lot of our new listeners are coming from. Bubba got some smart to him and figured out how to put the podcast and full episodes up on YouTube. And because people, you know, people like what they're familiar with, you know, we love the listeners on the podcast apps, but everybody knows YouTube and knows
it's
how to
brand
use
name.
It and is familiar with it. So as soon as we start putting them up there, people are really gravitating towards that. So that's a good thing. It's a good thing and a bad thing. It's good anywhere anybody can listen is a good thing, but we'd like for you to listen on the podcast apps, but we'll take you anywhere we can get you.
Exactly. There's no question about it. And Bubba, before we get started with the round table, tell everybody we've got a great guest here tonight.
Yeah, on our most recent episode, we caught up with Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South and Saturday Tradition, talked a little SEC and Big Ten. So on tonight's show, we're going to be catching up with Chris Phillips. He's the host of the Spurs Up Show, a South Carolina podcast, and he does an excellent job covering the Gamecocks, but also the SEC as a whole. So we'll talk a little more SEC football with Chris Phillips.
Sounds good. And, of course, we said, after Chris Phillips, we have some huge announcements to make, so we'll do that. And let's do our roundtable first. Obviously, we're going to get to football, but guys, got a few stories to talk about first. One is a sports story, but we can talk about that first. A few days ago, Kyle's favorite sport, soccer.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. There's sarcasm there, folks, if you don't know me. Kyle's favorite sport is football, so a different kind of football, pigskin. But anyway, the United States women team scored 13 goals against Thailand, okay? So ever since they scored those 13 goals, they have been criticized. They've been, you know, they've run up the score and blah, blah, blah. They've celebrated on, you know, well, first of all, if you've ever played soccer, you run your butt off, and you don't normally get it's not every day you get 13 goals, okay? It never happens. So it was one of those things where the U.S. women's team is one of the best in the world. Thailand was just lucky to make it, to be honest. And it was a total mismatch, to say the least. Obviously, the score bears that. But I want to get your guys' take on it. It's funny how if the Americans do something, then we're wrong. And we're bad. And if another team does it, well, I'm sorry, the United States should have better players. And it's just funny how when we have a dominant soccer team, then people get upset. So I just thought it was interesting.
Just in general, my thoughts on that kind of stuff in general, unless you're being classless about it, like calling timeouts to try to, you know, preserve a shutout or blatantly, you know, trying to score with you know, under a minute to go in the game or something like that. If you're just running your set plays and you're going through your offense, you know, and you're not, you know, blatantly trying to run it up, I have no problem with it. Your goal is to go out there and compete, and if you can't stop them, get better. And, you know, I don't know anything about soccer. I don't know how many players you have on the team. I don't know if they got a chance, you know, maybe to get some backups in, and the backups just kept
scoring. They were scoring.
On
the yeah, they were scoring.
So, I mean, in general, without knowing any details of it, in general, I'm always okay with that unless it's blatant.
Well, another thing, Kyle, is that, okay, say, for example, we lose a game and a certain team puts 58 points and we only have three. If you look at the context, there were some games that we played teams under the Montgomery era where the score was not run up on us. It was one of those things where
it looked like it, but it wasn't.
Right. And then,
you know, somebody scores 50 points on you in the first half. That's not running the score up.
Right. You see what I'm saying? So
yeah,
I can relate to the 13-0 because what I'm saying is,
do you know the context thereof? Do you know if they were scoring late? Do you know if
they scored? They scored a lot all throughout, and I'm not sure how close it was to the end, but it was one of those situations. Number one, well, like you were saying, you've got one player who's Morgan. She scored 5 goals herself. They just couldn't stop her, and I'm not. Obviously, I don't. I don't know all the players, and I don't know every single thing about the women's team or the men's team. However, I do follow it enough to, I mean, maybe I would say more than a casual fan, but I'm not hardcore, like knowing all the stats and all that. But anyway,
Who was this game against? Thailand.
And then they were talking about today. It's like the story's been going on for a few days now. It's ridiculous about how the women's.
Look, it's two things with that, though, dude. And you're feeding into it. It's a dead period for sports, and people are just looking for crap to talk about.
So, well, that and the fact I know, and the fact that anytime they could get a jab on the United States, a Canadian analyst said she was talking about how they shouldn't have been celebrating. That was another thing I was getting at on the 13th goal, the way they did on the first. Well, if you follow hockey or soccer, there's not a lot. That's one of the reasons why people don't like soccer.
I guess
not a lot of offense.
I don't like soccer because it sucks. But I guess it depends. No, I apologize to any ladies who play soccer. It's a fine game for ladies.
But you see what I'm saying? Like, in other words,
well, let me finish my thought. I got sidetracked.
Okay.
If it was a player, maybe you're a good player if you're on the freaking U.S. national team. But let's say it was an alternate or, I don't know, a backup, and she got her, you know, a goal that she wasn't expecting to, and that was the 13th goal, okay. But if it was a starter, and probably you shouldn't be celebrating so much when you're scoring goal number 13. But who knows? It's much to do about nothing. I don't know. I don't care about soccer. I like Thai food, so, you know, running up on a country, I don't like their food, I guess. I don't know. I don't know the context, but in general, I don't have a problem with.
Here's another thing. Okay, basically, what happens is if you
13-0 doesn't even sound like a blowout. I mean, I don't.
It is. Oh, it's bad. 5 or 6-0 is a butt kicking.
Okay.
13 is like double. I don't know what that would be, but it's bad as far as that's concerned. But as far as the other thing is for a strategy. Another reason why you score 13 goals is because when you're playing the World Cup, one of the things they look at is goal differential. So if you score 13-0, you've already up 13 goals.
So it's either who wins the game.
No, I'm saying not about winning the game, but as far as, like, if there's ties or there's other factors involved. And the women team, they have a tough – in other words, that was an easy match for them. But they've got some tough ones coming up, I'm sure. I have to look at it closely, but I know that for a fact. And they – yeah, they got the nice one today or a few days ago, but what they have coming up in group play is probably not going to be easy, and then they'll have the other rounds. But I just wanted to bring up that topic because it's been one of the ones that unfortunately, people that want to kick the United States all the time. You know, we're bad people, and we do this and we do that, and it's just it's a shame that, in other words, it's a great sports story.
Does Mia Hamm still play?
No, she's retired.
Hey, Bubba.
Yeah. Yeah.
You a ham?
Now, Dave, what are the standings like? Where are we in this thing? Because
that was our first match.
Okay. And, I was just thinking from the standpoint of what you're saying, that's one of those things, and that was the big thing why I would not have a problem with it, is because why are you I mean, yes, you want to be classy, but at the same time, if this is something that could come back several matches, games down the road and bite you, then you can't blame them. That you blame the rule.
Right, and that's the thing, is that the goal differential is one of the big things they look at in group play about the one. It may come down to that, the difference between the women moving on out of group play and not. So people that know soccer is like, I can't believe Dave is talking about it. We don't normally talk soccer. It's one of those stories that is bigger than soccer, the way that the team has been treated, which is unfairly, like they're bullies or something. It's totally ridiculous. So anyway, if you get a chance, check out the story. Another one, Kyle, I don't know if you saw this, but I want to mention this. There was a no-brainer. It's something very special to my heart. And then we'll get to football, I promise. Well, another topic and then football. John Stewart this week testified before Congress. We had members of Congress of the committee that didn't show up. It was about the firefighters who, 9/11, they had a bill they've been trying to pass for many years, like 18 years, to get funding to help them, because there was a whole bunch of chemicals and things. There was fire,
when 9/11, all the chemicals in the air, yeah.
Yeah, so there's firefighters that have cancer and different things have happened to them, and because of
pulmonary
it,
issues and all.
Correct. Yeah. So basically, if you didn't see that this week, folks, get a chance. It was a great moment. I will say this, Kyle, because we have Democrats and Republicans that are on this show, and so depending on who's on the show and not with us, we have both parties, people that probably don't care about politics. But it was a beautiful moment because it made you think, instead of being a Democrat or Republican, it made you think about doing the right thing and to help these guys out. I know the House passed it, I think maybe Wednesday or Thursday, I don't know about the Senate, but to me that was a no-brainer, where that's a bipartisan thing where you should get that done. And I went up to New York City after 9/11. It's something that is near and dear to my heart. So I know this is our normally a sports objective. That is objective. Maybe it's political objective or what, but human decency objective. How about that? The right thing objective. So I just want to get your thoughts, guys, on that.
I saw something about the story. Pass the bill. I mean, I don't know the contents of the bill, but if it's about getting help for these guys that risked their lives on 9/11 to save lives, and they're having health problems, and yeah, need to do what we can for them. Absolutely.
He made a good point. Do you know the response time to after when that plane hit? Do you know how quickly they got there?
I would imagine rather quick, based on, you know, how public that was.
5 seconds.
Wow, okay.
All these other stories you hear, that how quickly, within a matter of minutes, a couple minutes, 5 seconds, and it's taken, like he said, he got emotional. That was my favorite part, or the part that got to me, about how they got there 5 seconds, but yet we've been dragging our feet for 18 years. So anyway, folks, if you get a chance, check that out. I know it's all over YouTube. It's all over everywhere. A great speech by John Stewart. And again, it was nice to see that it's more than just Democrats or Republicans or about all kinds of craziness with the president, whatever. It was nice to see a political story where everybody was coming together. It was kind of nice. Guys, I had another sad moment on Sunday I want to talk about that I told you guys earlier. But on Sunday in Williamston, where I live, the local Sonic closed. I love Sonic, love drive-ins, so really big thing for me. And I know this kind of sounds crazy, but I've just had a really hard time with it because I love the place. I want to ask you guys off the top of your head, and then we're going to move on to football and talk sports. Do you guys have, like, restaurants or shops or stores that you can talk about? It doesn't matter if it's a chain or if it's a local place, whatever, that it closed and had a deep impact. I mean, I feel bad. Like, I feel sad. It's like I feel almost ashamed bringing it up. Like, it normally, if it's a lot of places, it wouldn't be a big deal. It just, I have an attachment to Sonic, so.
Gotcha. You don't know where you're going to get your tater tots and your cones now.
Where's my happy hour, Kyle? Yeah, come on. You're going to have to help me with happy hour now.
Gotcha. Local Chinese restaurant in Kinston, North Carolina, called China King, which is a common name for Chinese restaurants. Was there for years. Time I was a teenager, my mom moved to this area. And the guy who owned us got a Calvin show, and we ate there so regularly. Calvin and I became friends. I've known him since I was a teenager when he was a young guy when he opened that restaurant with his dad. As I got older, and then he was about 10 years older than me, and ran the restaurant, and him and I, you know, just were friends and used to eat there all the time, two or three times a week. Best Chinese food in this area by far. And he decided to close up shop and move to Wichita, where his brother lived, and help him run his restaurant, bigger market, more money. And that was extremely sad because it was a part of my life and my wife's life and a lot of my family's life going there. And not only just the restaurant, but, you know, our friendship with Calvin. And so when it closed and he moved away, that sucked big time. So that by far is the biggest impact of something closing. Other places. I remember as a kid, David, there in Williamston when Roses closed, the original Roses.
Yeah.
And there's the Roses in Williamston again, but the original Roses there. Remember that whole parking lot? You moved to Williamston, what, 87, 86?
85.
Can you remember when that was People's Drug Store?
Yes, I do.
Shoe Show. There was a jewelry store there, Rose's Department Store.
And Sears, Winn-Dixie and Sears.
Winn-Dixie, yeah, and then a Sears mail order. And I think they had a few things in the store. Nothing's there now in that parking lot. It's just nothing.
More of a government kind of building, right, now. Yeah, it's not a shopping center. Yeah.
Right. But, yeah, that Rose's as a kid, the original Rose's there, that bothered me when it closed. There are other places I'd have to think. But those are the two that come to mind.
Yeah, one of the things that bothers me is, I will just say this for sure, like a lot of the chains, Toys R Us, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
That was a good
KB,
that was
Toys,
a big
thing. Man.
KB Toys.
Yeah, originally before KB was KB,
was a,
K&K.
Yeah, there was a place called Circus World. It was a TV.
Ah,
it was,
yeah.
That was one.
In Raleigh area, Circus World of Funko Land. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. So, yeah, there was that one. A lot of bookstores that have closed over the years that were, you know, now. And then Barnes & Noble has been in trouble. They were sold to a hedge fund recently, so over the last week. So a lot of stores like that. Radio Shack was one. Being a radio nerd and obviously technology, love it. A lot of stuff like that. But I think stuff like the downtown area where Kyle and I are from.
What about RNC there in Williamson?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. There's so many that I'll think of after we do that. But, Bubba, do you have any that chains or local stores that restaurants that – I know that sounds silly, but I've really had a hard time with that this week. I didn't see it coming. I guess I should have.
Yeah, one of the ones that came to mind, and Kyle mentioned Roses. I remember going there a lot as a kid. As far as restaurants go, there was a local place, a place that opened, and I guess it was the fall of 97. It was right there adjacent to the parking lot for North Davidson High School. So as you can imagine, it was slammed a lot of the time because they did have excellent food. So pretty much any night, but especially the nights where there are ball games or different events going on at the high school, or after practice, those sorts of things. They had excellent food, whether it was burgers, chicken sandwiches, what have you. That's what they were open, I want to say, at least about 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 years. But and they made a killing. And they certainly didn't close because the business was going downhill. They were doing such excellent business. They couldn't keep it up and have a life. So opted for family reasons to go in another direction. But it was called Mitch and Jake's Sports No Bar and Grill because they found out the reason it was called Sports No Bar and Grill is because
proximity to the school with it.
Well, that, but then also they were going to call it Sports Bar and Grill, but they couldn't, since they didn't serve alcohol, they couldn't call it a bar, so they had to call it Sports No Bar and Grill, and so that was kind of unique and funny at the same time. But in addition to that, kind of a fast food chain, and I'm pretty sure these aren't around. I haven't heard of one in years, but I remember there was one, I know, in Mount Airy. I think it was called Rax. It was, from what I recall, it was kind of like an Arby's. It seems like they had roast beef sandwiches, chicken sandwiches, and they had
Rax.
Rax, R-A-X.
Rax.
Like,
yeah,
tax,
I don't know that,
tax, but was tax,
yeah,
with
I,
an R. Yeah.
I don't know that place.
But I remember my dad loved it, and they had excellent blueberry milkshakes.
You said it was a chain. Interesting. I have to look that up.
But it's not, I don't think, but it's not, it wasn't something, I don't
not
think it's one that was not in our,
regional.
It wasn't like, yeah, it's not, and it's not something that was in Eastern North Carolina, Kyle.
Right, yeah, I need to, still, I'm familiar with a lot of stuff, I need to look into that. I like stuff like that, so check it out.
I'll tell you one, Kyle, I'll tell you one that needs to come our way. This Bubba's Way, and I'll just make this real quick, and then we'll move on because it's not the subject matter I was going to. But speaking of local chains, regional chains, I would kill to have a Biscuitville in Eastern North Carolina. They're not going to do it.
I actually don't think there's Biscuitville all the way as far west as where Bubba is.
We have a Biscuitville in Lexington. Okay. To be honest with you, I don't recall. I don't think there's one here in Salisbury or down my way. But I know Winston-Salem has them. Clemens,
Burlington.
just west of Winston.
Yeah, the triad.
Yeah,
Winston-Salem's the triad, and I guess Lexington's kind of fringe. But yeah, I was considering you more Charlotte area. But,
yeah,
they're triad to. I think there's one in like Danville, and they're triad, and I think Dave, the nearest one's in Clayton.
Yeah, that sounds right.
When Riley has some of his baseball tournaments in Clemens, which is, I guess, a good 45, 50 minutes from here.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
45, 50 minutes from here, the morning to those baseball tournaments, sometimes we'll get biscuits there at Biscuitville. And they have an excellent bacon, egg, and cheese.
Yeah, I could definitely go for a Biscuitville in this area. I am always thought, and we'll get off of this subject, Dave, but maybe I don't really think the building fits, but I've always kind of thought Smithfield's Chicken and Barbecue would do gangbusters up your way in Williamston.
All right. So, Nell, you want to guys talk some football?
That'd be good.
Well, I'll tell you what. I want to get you guys for a few minutes, then we'll go to our guests. Do you guys have any kind of thoughts on outside? We've talked a lot about the Pirates. Are there any teams that come to mind nationally?
You mean compete for the national championship, or
nationally? No, just like teams. Like teams are going to be good. You think that maybe people don't know about?
Alabama.
I'll go out on the limb and say Georgia will be pretty good too.
Yeah, that's true.
Also, Clemson.
Clemson, Alabama, Georgia. Probably Oklahoma will be good in the Big 12. Now, honestly, guys, you know, this is the time of year I start doing my research, which I need to start getting in on that a lot better. so I can make my picks for each conference. I haven't done my due diligence just yet. It's still early June. And quite honestly, I'll be honest. I use Phil Steele, not his picks, because I really think my picks are just as good as anybody else's. But his magazine is so full of information. It's a good reference point for you to draw your own conclusions on things by reading the information, not so much his opinion. So I use his magazine as a lot to do a lot of my research. So it ain't out yet. I don't know. Besides the obvious, the usual suspects, I need to do my research, really. There's some teams that are going to interest me. Ohio State with the new head coach. It'll be interesting to see what they do. They got a lot of talent. Urban Meyer's recruited well there. So it'll be fun to see what they look like this year. I need to do my research. Bubba, what do you got?
I'm looking forward to seeing how things go at App State with the staff change there.
Yeah.
They have an awful lot coming back, so I'm very intrigued to see how year one of Elijah Drinkwitz goes. I know they have that game that we actually mentioned in their conversation with Chris Phillips. They go down to play the Gamecocks, and I think it's maybe the second week of November, so that will be interesting. And because if Scott Satterfield was coming back, this is a team that would be probably expected to push for 10 wins for sure. So Appalachian could win 8 or 9 ball games, and people could be a little disappointed.
Right. Well, I hope not. I mean, a first-year head coach, maybe right. 9-win season, is still quite successful.
And I say that, I mean, reasonable people, I think, would feel that way. But I'm just saying the bar has been set so high there that you're gonna have some people, if they go 8-4, it's going to be looked at as a disappointment.
Yeah. And to transition, from that, Bubba, to add on, up in Louisville, Satterfield, his first year up there, how will he translate from App to Louisville? It took him a couple years to get it going at App. He took over for Coach Moore. But his first 2 years weren't that great. How patient will they be at Louisville as he's building? I think they feel like Petrino left that program in pretty bad shape, so they'll probably give him plenty of time. They need to. Louisville's kind of been in a downward spiral. So it'll be interesting to see how Satterfield does up there in the ACC.
Another intriguing story in the ACC on the coastal side will be Georgia Tech and seeing how things go, not running the triple option. Of course, you have Jeff Collins taking over for Paul Johnson, who retired, so it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah, I don't know. Collins is a good coach. That just seems like an interesting fit to me. I don't know. I don't know about that hire down there. It may work out great, but you're right. That will be interesting.
Especially when you think about Georgia Tech and how they were able to compete. Maybe one of the reasons why they were able to compete is because of the option. And I don't know. That one, you're right about that. We talked about that one, that hire. What was that, back at the beginning of the year? Or
yeah, it wasn't a bad hire. He did a good job at Temple, but
right.
It's just, I don't know, it seems like an odd fit to me. And I know he came from Florida, so, he's got ties to the South, but I don't know. It just doesn't click in my brain.
Right.
By the way, Phil Steele, I didn't hear the interview. He was on Heart Radio today, and evidently made the comment that he thinks Mike Houston has the potential and time to take East Carolina to UCF level success.
I saw that tweeted out by Pirate Radio as well.
How about the fact that I was on record when he was hired saying he'll be the first coach to win 2 10-win seasons in the history of East Carolina back to back. So That's my prediction. I'm not saying this year or next year, but if he were here 4 or 5 years, I think that's what I feel like.
Yes, definitely a real possibility. I mean, that's why I wanted him here for 2 or 3 years now, because I think he has those kind of coaching chops, as he's proven at previous stops. So we'll see. But I'm looking forward to seeing.
I'll tell you something else, guys, in the ACC that I'm looking forward with Bronco Mendenhall, the job he's done at UVA.
Oh, my God.
You know, they had really been down for years, and he's steadily gotten that program. I mean, they've gotten, what did they win, 8 or 9 bowl games last year, and then and beat South Carolina by 4 touchdowns in the bowl game. So,
yeah, and you would think the UVA is kind of like one of those in the ACC where some teams check off as a win before Bronco Mendenhall, and then he comes in and, oh, my goodness, he's come in and he hired, remember when he hired Ruff in 2015?
Yeah.
And he's just done a great job. You're right about that. He's one of those guys. What's interesting is you have a situation where Virginia Tech has been, like, for years the top dog in the state of Virginia. And you look at now, Virginia Tech's on a downward slide. And I'm not saying that because of my feelings about them canceling the series with us. I'm just being straight up honest. And then you had a situation where when you had Mike Houston in Virginia, you have a whole bunch of kids going to James Madison at the FCS level. You have a great program, in my opinion. We faced them this year at Old Dominion. They're not a slouch. They're competitive in Conference USA play. And, I mean, they gave us fits, what was that, a year or two ago? So you got a whole bunch of
– Last year.
Last year, that's right. But you have a whole bunch of teams now where it was pretty much just Virginia Tech and everybody else, and all of a sudden you have Virginia's good now. You have – I think that James Madison's going to continue to be good. Even though they're at the FCS level, I think they, as we found out, they can beat FBS teams. They almost beat State last year, and they're going to be competitive. And look at Old Dominion. I mean, you can't – if you're East Carolina, you better not take them for granted when we go up there to Norfolk this year.
No doubt. We're not in a position to take anybody for granted.
Right.
You know, ODU on paper looks like they're going to be pretty down this year, but you're absolutely right. We better be ready to play every week. Particularly, you look, it's a road game. I think we won one road game since 2015. So, think about that, guys.
When that field goal went wide against UConn.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's 2019 now. It's been a minute. So, you're damn right, they better not take anybody for granted on the road. In fact, because of that stat, unless we take care of business against NC State or Navy, which is possible, if we don't take care of business one of those two games, I bet because of that fact, that's not winning a road game since 2015, except at UConn. I would imagine the line for that game, even if ODU is 0-3 or 1-3, which I think they probably will be, it probably won't be as big as you might think it'll be because of that. And ODU has a great home record.
Yes, they do. And they got the – Bubba was sharing with us the stadium renovations just a couple of days ago. So, Bubba, you want to go to head to our guest?
Yeah, I will in just a second. And there were a couple others that I was going to bring up. One, while we're in the state of Virginia, I brought up UVA, but – our good friends in Blacksburg, well, formerly good friends prior to Whit Babcock.
There's a lot of good Virginia. Let me just say that too, Bubba.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good Virginia Tech people. I have relatives and friends that are Virginia Tech fans, and they were, and I will say this, they don't understand. I'm not going to get off this tangent again, but they don't understand what happened with the series and everything. They love playing East Carolina. They love actually having a game they can come to Greenville to see a ball game. Or they both a home game there for them is a short ride, and coming to Greenville is a short ride. So they're very upset about losing the series. Not all the fans are wanting to cancel the series with East Carolina, so I'm trying to be fair.
after that year that Justin Fuente and the Hokies had a year ago, it'll be very interesting to see how they bounce back. And then also up the road in Morgantown, you obviously had Coach Holgerson move on to Houston, and he's in our league now. So you have Neil Brown, who had done such a solid job down at Troy, taking over. It'll be interesting to see how year one goes up in Morgantown.
Also, oh, well, in that neck of the woods, Liberty's got Hugh Freeze now returning to FBS coaching after being fired at Ole Miss. Obviously, you know, there are a lot of controversy, so it's a lot of stories up in that part of the world to follow.
It really is, and like I said, for the days of Virginia Tech fans to think that they were the top dog, they're not the top dog anymore, and we'll see how things play out. But I tell you what, there's a team in Columbia that wouldn't play; they're not playing us as well. But we definitely love our next guest, right, Bubba?
We do. He made his debut on the show, or is making his debut on the show, I should say. And that is Chris Phillips from the Spurs Up Show. Give it a listen if you have an interest in the SEC, or obviously specifically the South Carolina Gamecocks. And let's go to that interview with Chris right now.
Well, as we're talking football in the summertime, and it's never too early to talk football, Bubba, we got another special guest, right?
We do. I'm very excited to talk a little South Carolina football and also about the SEC. And now we would like to welcome in from the Spurs Up Show, Chris Phillips. Chris, welcome in.
Hey, guys. Appreciate you having me on, man. Looking forward to talking some football. It's never too early.
That's right. We're excited to have you on because it's that means that we're getting a day every day that we get closer and closer. And unfortunately, our baseball team didn't play very well last week, and so we're out of the hunt there for Omaha. So as soon as that was over, our very own Kyle from LaGrange said, hey, man, it's football season. So here we are, and we wanted to bring you on and talk some football.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't think football season really ever ends in the South, even with obviously the Gamecocks baseball program being what it is for South Carolina fans. But, yeah, football never truly ends in the South. That is 100% accurate.
Your old coach has called this time of year talking season.
Yeah, indeed. No, it is certainly talking season, and there's a lot of that going on right now. It certainly will be a ton of that next month at SEC Media Days. I know everybody's really looking forward to it, as am I. So,
Chris, I wanted to start things off. Obviously, you guys are going into year four of Will Muschamp. What are the thoughts around the Gamecock fan base? And are you pleased with things and where the program seems to be headed?
Yeah, I'm pleased. I think for the majority of the fan base, it's still very, very much wait and see. I think there are a lot of South Carolina fans that, to be completely honest with you, we're not thrilled with the hire when Will Muschamp was first hired on, and again, are in very much wait and see mode. I look at it more so as, I like to ask people that have problems with Will Muschamp, what else is there that he could be doing that he's not doing currently at South Carolina? I mean, obviously, South Carolina fans are waiting for on-field results similar to what the Gamecocks had from 2011 to 2013. But, I mean, when in South Carolina's history has it ever been a bad start for a coach? I mean, listen, however it's come, numbers are numbers, but he has more wins in his first three seasons than Steve Spurrier did. He's taken the Gamecocks to three straight bowl games. He has an Outback Bowl win, and, I mean, you can see it in the recruiting. He's tearing it up on the recruiting trail. I think he's getting the kind of players he needs into South Carolina to be really successful and to win big. And I think you're seeing it with his 2020 recruiting class. I think the new operations facility is a game changer for him. So, again, I think from the masses, from the fan base, it is still very, very much wait and see. But me personally, I like what Will Muschamp is doing. I like where the program is headed. Now we've got to see some results on the field because, I think he would tell you and everyone will tell you at the end of the day, that's really what it comes down to is wins and losses.
Right. Like how much? Sorry, go ahead, Kyle.
I was going to follow up on your question, Bubba. Chris, how much the fans that do have some unease or maybe a little impatient or want to see more results faster, how much, if any, does Clemson's success play into that?
That's what I was going to ask the question.
I think it plays a monumental part. I mean, I don't think, I'm not trying to compare Will Muschamp to Steve Spurrier because Steve Spurrier is a Hall of Fame head coach. He had won a national championship. What he got to South Carolina, there there are a lot of differences there, right? I don't want to feel like I'm comparing those two guys directly, but, I mean, Steve Spurrier never dealt with the type of pressure that Will Muschamp is dealing with in regards to, you know, both of your neighbors in the state of Georgia and then up in Clemson, South Carolina, are having the type of runs, the best runs arguably in their entire football history. So I think certainly, you know, if Clemson was going 6-6, 7-5 every year, kind of what South Carolina is doing, there would not be nearly the pressure that, you know, Will Muschamp is facing. But listen, that's the reality of it. I think you can almost spin it sort of that Clemson's success is actually doing South Carolina some good in the sense that they know they have to step up their game. I think that's why we've seen a commitment to the facilities. We're seeing a commitment to recruiting. I think, you know, the commitment to winning right now, I don't think it's ever been as good as it is right now at South Carolina. And I think Clemson's success certainly is a driving force in that as well.
What is the what do you think from that standpoint? I'll add to that. What do you think that South Carolina needs to do to compete with the likes of the Clemsons, the Georgias, the Alabamas? Because you guys have such a proud fan base and one that I know how much loves football and loves the Gamecocks.
I think it's just simply recruit. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, it's not about the X's and O's. It's about the Jimmys and Joes. And you've got to have the players to win at that level and having quality depth as well. I mean, that's the thing. You go to, like, you look at an Alabama or even a Georgia and Clemson right now, their twos and threes are just as good as their ones are. And that's something South Carolina, you know, I think we saw a lot of, especially last year in the Gamecocks blowout loss to Georgia and, you know, losing the games at Clemson. You're seeing a lack of quality depth, especially when you saw the injuries hit on the defensive front. Again, I think that's the only way that can be fixed is through recruiting. I just think simply if you don't have the players, you know, there aren't many coaches that are going to, you know, turn you into a national title contender with just average players. You've got to have above average exceptional players, and I think that's, you know, again, you're starting to see South Carolina get those kind of guys with the Zach Pickens, arguably possibly the Jordan Birches of the world, the Marshawn Lloyds, like the guys that South Carolina is recruiting. So, you know, again, I think they're doing everything they can to get those type of players in there, but it's not something that happens overnight. It just takes time, and it's something you got to build, and I think they're doing that.
But I was going to ask a moment ago, first three seasons, you know, 7-6, 9-4, and then last year, 6-7. I know last year where you had close calls with Texas A&M and Florida, where one or both of those games you go the other way, you're looking at an 8-4 season, but then you go to a bowl game with the bowl in Charlotte, and then you end up losing to Virginia. That game really surprised me, not as much that you lost, but how you lost 28-0. So last year, was that kind of a disappointing season from your standpoint?
I mean, I think it certainly was, especially when you take into account all of the hype that was surrounding South Carolina going into last season. I think maybe it was a little bit of overhype. You know, the Gamecocks got, I don't want to call it a fluky win, but anytime you get five turnovers in a game from a team and you're down as much as South Carolina was and you're able to come back when they beat Michigan, I mean, it's, you know, you stole one. You definitely stole one. I think that, you know, it provided a lot of optimism, which was really, really good. I mean, this program could certainly use a jolt of optimism and fans expecting big things. But, you know, yeah, I think with all the hype, obviously, I would call it certainly a disappointing season. I mean, everyone, you know, you guys probably saw it and talked about it last year. Everyone put their stock in that week 2 matchup against Georgia. And, you know, I think when the Gamecocks really, you know, just got throttled at home, I think it humbled everybody. It made everybody kind of take a step back and look. And, you know, then the injuries hit on defense. And I know everyone, you know, I think the two biggest things that hurt South Carolina that's really, again, you talked about Will Muschamp, Gamecocks fans' thoughts on Will Muschamp. The Florida loss last year and the bowl game are two that I think South Carolina fans are having, you know, real trouble right now. When people do cite their concerns with him, they look at those two games. The Florida game, obviously, just the meltdown, and I think just the lack of defense, the lack of defensive depth, all the injuries really played a part. And then, you know, the bowl game, which, you know, I will say I'm a huge believer that unless you're in the playoff or you're playing for the college football national championship, you know, bowl games really don't mean anything at the end of the day. And I just think that I sort of took that approach that win or lose, this game doesn't mean everything. It's nice to win. It's a nice to win. But I do agree the way they lost it, obviously 28-0, nobody saw that coming. So, I think that that's another reason for some of the pessimism going into the 2019 season. It certainly was a shock. But, yeah, I would definitely say it was a definitely did not meet up to expectations, at least what South Carolina fans were hoping, which is what makes year 4 so big for Will Muschamp and company, even with a tough schedule.
You say year four, you open up the season with the Tar Heels in Charlotte. What's the feel for that game early? I mean, Mac Brown coming in first year back at North Carolina, put together a pretty good staff, but they were god-awful last year. It's got to be a game you guys feel pretty confident about.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I know I can speak for myself when I say, you know, the Gamecocks are a 7.5-point favorite right now in Vegas. I would absolutely hammer that number, take South Carolina. I mean, if the Gamecocks can't, I think if they can't win that one by double digits, it's going to be some reason for panic, if you will. Obviously, openers are tricky. Openers are very tricky, especially when there's a new coach on the other side. And, you know, I think the interesting storyline of Will Muschamp working under Mac Brown and all that, I think it is intriguing. But listen, on the field is where it's played and the guys on the field. And, I mean, you're looking at UNC, they're probably going to be starting a true freshman at quarterback. South Carolina's got its most talented front seven it has had under Will Muschamp. And it's got some real the defensive side of the ball is something I'm very excited about for South Carolina in 2019. And I think they should be able to have a field day. And you think of Jake Bentley on offense, you have a fourth-year starter, you do have Brian Edwards and Shai Smith back. I know you lose Debo, but I think that's a game where South Carolina has a chance to get off to a very loud start in 2019 and get a really, really big win over North Carolina.
After that game against the Tar Heels, then you guys have Charleston Southern, obviously a FCS foe. Man, it gets real very quickly in game three against Alabama. So talk about opening conference play with the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, it's funny. They're going to be – I bet the over-under is probably at a million times we're going to see replays of 2010. And can South Carolina pull the upset again? That's the question on everybody's minds. I mean, you're right. It gets real fast when you're taking on Alabama. Listen, that one specifically, I think, for South Carolina, it's more about showing that they can come out in a big game and at least be competitive. And I don't want to set the expectations low for that one necessarily, that – you know, fans should want to see a win, should want to see South Carolina go toe-to-toe with Alabama. But, again, I think that's going to be a big one for the perception of the progress of Will Muschamp's program, because at the end of the day, he's doing everything right. You've got the operations facility, they're recruiting at a high level. But there's no hiding Will Muschamp's struggles at South Carolina against ranked opponents in big-time games. Again, the last time South Carolina was on a national stage or the bowl game, they lost 28-0. I just think for the program – from a national perspective, you don't have to beat Alabama. You don't have to win. I personally don't think 2010, is going to happen again. But you've got to go out there and at least make it a competitive ball game and make Alabama sweat. I think that game scares me in the sense that I think a lot of people are, I think it's funny to say people are sleeping on Alabama because Alabama might be the number one team in the country in the preseason. But I think people's last image of Alabama is them getting shellacked by Clemson in the college football national championship. And I know better than to think that Alabama will come out ready to play, looking for revenge probably against everyone they play in 2019. I think for South Carolina, it's about making that one a competitive ball game and making the Crimson Tide sweat.
Yeah, I don't see a down year for Alabama, right, just because they lost the national championship the way they did and lost it. I think Nick Saban's getting like no sleep right now, and probably every coach is like, if we don't do well this year, you're all fired. I don't know, but I have a feeling that they're going to come back with a vengeance.
Not at all. And I'll tell you this as well. I mean, Alabama right now, a lot of lines came out for some of the bigger games, and Alabama right now is an 18-point favorite over South Carolina. And I'll tell you this, I asked my listeners this on the Spurs Up show, how many South Carolina fans would be happy if the Gamecocks lost by 14 points? I mean, I'm serious when I say that. I really do think a 14-point loss at home would signal that, the Gamecocks are making strides and are on the right track just because of how good a team Alabama is and is going to be. So, somebody once told me, somebody very wise once told me, nobody has ever gotten rich betting against Alabama. So I certainly, I know Clemson's made strides, and they can argue they're the premier program, but I will certainly not be betting against Alabama to not be the team that runs college football.
When you take a look at this South Carolina schedule, it's one that I've seen a lot of publications, such as Athlon, I believe it was, maybe 247 Sports as well, talk about being the nation's most difficult. You also have Florida and Clemson at home, and then you have trips know, down between the hedges to play that Georgia team that you were just talking about. And then also you have to go to Kyle Field to take on Jimbo Fisher and a steadily improving Texas A&M club.
No doubt. Yeah, I mean, the schedule, you know, the schedule is very, very tough, but in my opinion, the schedule provides a lot of opportunity. I mean, listen, I talked about before, Will Muschamp has been very much criticized for his lack of success as far as beating ranked opponents, as far as getting that. I wrote an article a couple of weeks ago talking about Will Muschamp getting a signature win. That's something South Carolina really hasn't had. I mean, you look at each year, I mean, I guess you could argue 2016 against Tennessee was a good win. I mean, Tennessee was a ranked team, but other than that, that's the one win South Carolina's had against ranked opponents. So I look at this schedule more so from the sense that, you know, South Carolina has a lot of great opportunity. This is why you come play in the SEC. This is why you come play at a school like South Carolina to get the opportunity to play against the big guys and get on national TV and make a statement. I mean, I look at the schedule. It's funny. You know, I think that it's certainly not the biggest game, but the most important game to me is the Kentucky game at home in week five. I just think South Carolina has to get that Wildcat-sized monkey off their back, and you just can't reasonably tell anyone nationally or in the state that the program is headed in the right direction if you lose to Kentucky for a sixth straight year. I just don't think it'll happen. But, again, like you said, it's the toughest schedule in college football, but I think it provides the most opportunity, and I think it'll be – I'll be honest, I think it'll be a little bit inexcusable if South Carolina can't get a win over a ranked opponent just because they play so many of them. I think that opportunity will be there to beat a ranked opponent or beat a quality opponent this year. But no doubt, it is a it's a tough schedule. It's a demanding schedule. But, hey, in the SEC, you play a tough schedule every year, and – again, that's why you come to South Carolina, to have that type of opportunity to play against the best.
Before we move on from the schedule, I was just going to say another intriguing matchup, and hats off to the Gamecocks for playing this game, is that early November game against App State, because that's a program that's obviously had an awful lot of success in the Sun Belt in recent years under Scott Satterfield. Of course, he moved on to Louisville, and now under Elijah Drinkwitz. That could be an intriguing matchup.
Indeed. You know, it is. App State's got a really proud program. They've got a really, really good football program. We're watching those guys back in the late or mid to late 2000s when they won, what, three straight national titles at the FCS level, if you will. But I think the thing with South Carolina is that game looks tricky on paper. It's certainly South Carolina will have to come ready to play, but I don't think South Carolina will be taking Appalachian State lightly just because of all the talk they've heard about that, how that's a potential trap game. And listen, if we're worrying about the Gamecocks losing to Appalachian State at that point, the season has already been, I would argue, a wash. So I think the Gamecocks, it's an intriguing opponent. I like the non-conference matchup. I personally do, just to kind of mix it up. But I do think the Gamecocks, again, it's about the Jimmies and Joes, and I think South Carolina will just have too many quality players versus what App State's bringing to the table.
One question I have to you, Chris, not to be the bad guy, but on the schedule this year, we're playing Gardner-Webb. It was supposed to be South Carolina coming to Greenville. Can you help us understand, as Pirate fans and Pirate Nation, a lot of we love South Carolina, love the regional matchup. We're trying to understand, we had in the past where South Carolina would come to Greenville, and now it just seems like we're signing two for ones, and we go to Columbia, but we're having trouble with the Gamecocks coming to play in Pirate Nation in Greenville. Do you know why that is?
You know, I don't 100% know why. I will say that I just think a lot of schools, for whatever reason, you know, don't want to do it. I don't know 100% why. I know that those have been good games.
Yeah.
Listen, I could argue a couple of times East Carolina probably should have beaten South Carolina. I mean, you think specifically that 2016 game. Or what is it, ECU turned the ball over four times, I think, in the red zone? I mean, it was a crazy South Carolina eat that one out. I mean, you know, I don't know the real reasoning behind why they wouldn't want to play it, but obviously there is something that goes into it behind it. What, you know, everything is driven by money, we all know, so it probably has something to do with that. But, you know, I think it's just tough nowadays to get these programs to sign off on 2-1s. You've seen the whole deal with UCF and the Florida schools and kind of what's going on. It's just really, really hard, I think, to get these schools to agree with it. And they all want as many home games as they can get. Again, it's all about getting money, getting revenue in, and you know, whoever will come to them, they'll do it. So I don't know. I'd love to see it. Again, I think it'd be I'm all about it just because I'd love to go see a, you know, a different campus, a different stadium. I think it's cool to see these different kind of matchups, not have to wait to bowl season to see these unique matchups. So I have no idea why, but yeah, would definitely love to see South Carolina and East Carolina square off again, especially either way, whether it was in Columbia or whether it was in Greenville.
Well, you guys are coming, are scheduled to come to Greenville in 21, and we play down there next year.
Well, hopefully that remains on the schedule. I know it gets kind of crazy, like you said. I think they're supposed to play this year, so just hopefully nobody screws that up in any way, right?
And, Chris, you referenced those Florida schools. I know USF, along those same lines, like you're saying, they had a two-for-one with Texas, and Texas bought out that game in Tampa and moved it to Austin, and I think they're giving USF something like $1.7 million or something.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, it's like I said, it's all money-driven. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. But, you know, I'll be completely honest with you guys. I mean, I know that the scheduling is a big deal, and people say how laughable Alabama's schedule is and the weakness versus strength of the schedule. I mean, I'll be honest. I mean, when you play in the SEC and you play the type of schedule, I mean, look at South Carolina's schedule. You know, I don't want to see a team play four non-conference games against, you know, the school for the deaf and the blind, right? I don't want to see those type of matchups. But I mean, South Carolina already has a non-conference matchup every year with Clemson, who is doing what they are doing right now. You know, if the Gamecocks want to schedule two in-state FCS opponents or something like that, I'm all for that. Again, the schedule is tough enough, in my opinion. If you go undefeated in the SEC, you're going to the playoff anyways. You don't need to schedule crazy, crazy hard. Again, especially in the Gamecock scenario where you're already having to play Clemson every single year. So I love seeing the matchups. I love seeing the, you know, we have the openers, Florida, Miami. Like, we love seeing those type of openers. But I think I'm one of the few on the side that you play in the SEC. I mean, you look at South Carolina's schedule this year, even if they didn't have any of the non-conference opponents, you could still argue it's one of the toughest in college football.
Yeah, and to add on to the two-for-one talk and all, you know, about, you know, Bubba, you mentioned about Texas buying out the game at USF and South Carolina buying out the game this year that was supposed to be in Greenville, and hopefully the one in 2021 will stay on the schedule. But at some point, you got some ADs at some of these group of five schools like East Carolina, like USF, and we have a brand new AD here now. He's going to have some balls and just say, you signed this 2-for-1. We're not taking the buyouts. You either come play it or you forfeit the win.
I agree. Go ahead.
And that's how I would handle it. And so hopefully that's how John Gilbert will handle it, our current AD, if it comes up.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to say, I think what you know, a lot of people have given his name slips my mind at the moment, but the UCF AD, a lot of people have given him crap for how, you know, resilient he's been, but I think he's really setting the precedent, actually. When you really step back and take a look at it, I think it's impressive what he's doing. I think he will not be the UCF AD long, just in the sense that there will be a bigger school that scoops him up. There is no question, because when you have the guts and the balls, as you mentioned, to stand up to the Florida schools, the big-time Florida schools, I mean, that's not easy. That does take guts, and I think it's impressive, and I think you're right. I think a lot of other group of five ADs should honestly follow suit and try to do exactly what he's done.
Yeah, because the money's going to come. If the home game's already signed, they need to take the buyout, because if they honor the game, the money's going to come anyway, because you're going to sell a lot of tickets.
Exactly.
I was going to ask you about the East as a whole. Obviously, Georgia's going to be the favorite. How's Florida looking with year two under Mullen and Tennessee?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you already mentioned the SEC East runs through Athens, Georgia. I fully expect the Dogs to get back to Atlanta. It's funny and interesting stat. Georgia has not gone undefeated since 1980 when they won the national title. So I think the Bulldogs will slip up somewhere. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of optimism in Gainesville, obviously, with Dan Mullen year two. I'll be honest with you guys. I'm not quite as high on Florida as some, just because, honestly, the Gamecocks had Florida beat by 17 points in their home field and really blew that game. I don't know if it's because of that particular game or what it is, or maybe because Felipe Franks is still their quarterback. I'm not 110% sold that Florida is all of a sudden going to really seriously challenge Georgia for the East, but there is a lot of optimism in Gainesville. I think they'll be a solid team. They do still have talent. And then obviously a lot of optimism in Tennessee as well, which I'm extremely wait and see on that. I just – you know, with Jeremy Pruitt, what he's building, they still have questions on offense. They still have questions at the quarterback position. I know, again, Jeremy Pruitt is doing a similar job like Will Muschamp is, trying to bring in talent, trying to build, but, you know, just all relating it back to the Gamecocks. I mean, this is a Tennessee team that – a Tennessee program that has never beaten Will Muschamp. So, you know, I think that'll be a huge game in the sense that we're going to really see kind of where both programs are. I think it's important for South Carolina to win that one to, you know, stay ahead of Tennessee. I mean, South Carolina as a program, I would say, has been ahead of Tennessee the last couple of years. I think it's important they win that one. They win that one to, you know, to stay ahead of those guys. Then you look at the bottom, and I mean, it, with all due respect to Kentucky, who's beaten South Carolina 5 years in a row, I think Kentucky will struggle. You lose Benny Snell. I don't think Terry Wilson is a guy that's really capable of going out there and win the game solely on his arm. I know Mark Stoops has done a good job, and, for Kentucky, there really is nowhere else to go but down, right? When you win 10 games in 2018, I think they'll certainly take a step back, hover around bowl eligibility, and then I think Vanderbilt rounding out the bottom of the SEC East under Derek Mason.
Yeah, I mean, that the Kentucky team, they've been doing well, but from all the experts I'm hearing, including yourself, looks like they're going to be maybe a 500 team, like 6-6 at the best.
Yeah, I just think when you look at all they lost, you know, Benny Snell, obviously their all-time yards leader, and then on defense, I mean, you lose a guy like Josh Allen, you're not replacing that guy, at least not at Kentucky. This is an Alabama where they're just reloading. There isn't another Josh Allen on the Kentucky roster. So I think they will struggle. I do think Kentucky will struggle. Again, it's funny, I tell people that even with the 5 years in a row, there hasn't been a single game in the Kentucky streak that I've gone into expecting the Gamecocks to lose. I just haven't. I think that'll be the same. Honestly, I think that'll be the same sort of scenario this year where I think there'll be a lot of nerves because the Gamecocks need to get the monkey off their back. But I just don't think there's – South Carolina fans do not look at that Kentucky game and say this is one we should worry about. That's one that's chalked up as a win every single year in the preseason. So, but yeah, overall, again, the SEC East, it runs through Athens. I think Georgia could possibly trip up against Florida in the world's largest outdoor cocktail party or at Auburn. I think at Auburn's a tricky game. But, yeah, it's Georgia's to lose, no doubt.
Something else I wanted to ask you.
Oh, go ahead, Bob. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, before we shift and talk about the West, obviously, somebody that you're familiar with that South Carolina-Clemson rivalry is Kelly Bryant. So, with that move that he made to Missouri, what do you think about that and him taking over for Drew Lock?
Yeah, I apologize, guys. I completely forgot about Missouri. But, no, it's interesting. Missouri is one of the more –
so does everyone else.
it's one of the more interesting teams in the SEC. I mean, Missouri was quietly very good last year. And, I mean – you know, I hate to keep saying I'm wait and see on everything, but I don't think Kelly Bryant is as good as Drew Lock is. There have been a lot of South Carolina fans that have expressed worry to me about the Gamecocks' road trip up to Columbia, Missouri, and I'm just not quite as worried yet. I mean, I think Missouri's a team that benefits from kind of a softer schedule, but I think that's – you look at that one, I think that's one the Gamecocks can still win. I mean, the Gamecocks have had great success against Mizzou. I mean, you look at last year's crazy rain game as probably being the closest game against those guys in the last couple of years. But, I mean, yeah, you know, it's an intriguing storyline. I'll be very interested to see kind of the motive or what really motivates this Missouri team. You know, they're not eligible to go to a bowl. They're not going to be a team that's going to really contend for the East. So what drives them every week? Because I think if things start to go south in Mizzou, they could really go south, but there's been other people that have picked Missouri to win 8-9 games in 2019. So, you know, they're definitely an intriguing team led by Kelly Bryant, the transfer from Clemson. And I think he'll have a solid year, but I think people are kind of sleeping on really how good Drew Lock was.
Now shifting to the SEC West, I think pretty much anybody would be a fool to think Alabama's down. They seem like they're, of course, once again, as long as you have Nick Saban as your coach, it looks like they're going to be chalked in as the number one team coming out of the West, right?
And they've earned that. They should be chalked in as the number one team. Again, listen, like I said, nobody, until we see otherwise, nobody has ever, you know, every year there's going to be people that kind of go against the grain and say, this is the year Alabama finally falls off, if you will. I'm not going to be that guy. I think Alabama is still the team to beat in the SEC in general. You know, obviously, I think going back to the East a little bit, Georgia's number one goal, all that's left for Kirby Smart to do, and I think their number one goal this year doesn't even revolve around the SEC East. It revolves around beat Alabama. That's what Georgia's number one goal is in 2019, is to find a way to beat Alabama. So, no, I think the road to the SEC Championship in the West certainly runs through Tuscaloosa, but, you know, we take a look every year and we think that maybe LSU can challenge, maybe Auburn can challenge, maybe Jimbo Fisher's Texas A&M team can challenge. But, no, I really do think that it's, you know, Alabama's going to be the team to beat, and they're most likely going to they might go through the season undefeated. I think there's a really good shot they go through undefeated or maybe just lose one game. But, yeah, it's Alabama's conference until somebody else steps up and says otherwise.
And Chris, like second in the West, would you go Coach Ogeron and LSU, or – I kind of like Texas A&M.
I think Texas A&M is the sexy pick. I just think people really are jumping on that Jimbo Fisher bandwagon. Listen, Kellen Mond's a really, really good football player. I mean, he's fun to watch. I mean, I remember watching specifically the Texas A&M Clemson game last year. I mean, he's a dynamic player. So there is no question. I think Kellen Mond is even sort of underrated. To me, he could be one of the best players in the SEC. You know, who's realistically going to contend, and who of those teams are most likely to knock off Alabama? I mean, I just want to say top to bottom from talent-wise, I think LSU. But, man, LSU, they have not had the ability to show up in those games. And I think we're seeing kind of the effects of that this year. The game is in Tuscaloosa. That game, I don't know if you guys saw in the scheduling, it's not the primetime game for this year. It's not CBS's primetime game. I just think that speaks to, you know, that game has become – It used to be so hyped up. We remember the game of the century, stuff like that. Those guys rematched the national title.
Yeah.
That game's lost some of its luster because it's been so one-sided for so long. So, I mean, you know, you'd like to think maybe LSU could be that team, but realistically it's just going to be who can step up and beat Alabama. I mean, Auburn's always got a chance in that rivalry. But, yeah, I mean, Texas A&M's definitely an attractive pick. I think we're going to know a lot about the Aggies after week two when they go to Clemson and take on those guys. But, like I said, I think out of those three, you know, Texas A&M, Auburn, LSU, I would probably go with the Tigers.
And then you look at a team like one of the teams that you with a rich tradition, but I think that they're obviously going to be down this year, is Arkansas. What do you know about them?
Well, there's only one way to go for them, and it's up. when you have as bad a year as they had in 2018, I mean, you're only going to improve and get better. But listen, it's a rebuilding job for Chad Morris. I mean, Brett Bielema did not – I mean, when you have that big of a coaching philosophy change from what Brett Bielema wanted to do versus what Chad Morris is trying to do, I mean, there are just inevitable growing pains you're going to have to go through. And I think we certainly saw that last year. And you know, it's funny, Arkansas, before the Clemson game, Arkansas actually played Alabama as good as anybody did last year, scored a lot of points, kept that one decently close for a little while. But No, I think Arkansas, once again, in 2019, they'll struggle to get to a bowl. Not sure if they really will. They'll probably be floating around that 500 level all season. I think it's going to be a rough one for Chad Morris. But, again, Arkansas fans, I think, sort of knew what they were getting into, and you're going to see a lot of patience exerted down in Fayetteville, no doubt.
Something else, and kind of an intriguing story in the West, down in Oxford and Ole Miss, you have the only FBS staff that has two former FBS, well, not just FBS, but P5 head coaches in the coordinators' positions. You have offensive coordinator Rich Rodriguez, and then also Mike McIntyre is the defensive coordinator. Between the two of them, they're making $2.4 million.
Yeah, and Ole Miss is a really, really interesting scenario, just because all the fallout that happened from Hugh Freeze. And you know, I'm kind of one that believes that Matt Luke is not – he's not their guy of the future. I don't look at him that way. I'm not sure Ole Miss people really look at him that way. I think he's a nice bridge coach from, you know, to stabilize the program when it was in just a time of so much despair and so many problems coming through Oxford. But I don't think he's going to be the long-term answer, if you will. But yeah, Ole Miss is a team that – you know, just putting it bluntly, they will not be very good. They will not be very good in 2019. I think it's going to be a long, long year in Oxford. And again, with everything that happened, all the fallout from the free stuff, I think it's just something, if you're an Ole Miss football fan, you kind of saw it coming, and you're just going to have to take your lumps while, you know, Matt Luke does the best he can and get Ole Miss to a position just where it can it can make another big name, big splash hire and, you know, try to get back to where it was.
Chris, let's say in the Magnolia State, what about Mississippi State?
Yeah, that's an interesting one just from the sense that, you know, Joe Moorhead going into his second year, obviously you lose Nick Fitzgerald, which I've talked to some Mississippi State fans who, listen, they all love him, but he definitely had his shortcomings. I mean, Nick Fitzgerald, I had a Mississippi State fan actually tell me, you know, Fitzgerald, tough kid, great kid, but when he's throwing the ball, he can't hit the same spot two times in a row, if that tells you anything. So he had some issues throwing the football, no doubt, some accuracy issues. They've got a quarterback, young quarterback, his name slips my mind at the moment. They're really, really excited about it's going to be their starter this year. Could be a dynamic player, but, you know, they're always known for having a really tough defense, really hard-nosed defense. And, you know, again, I look at that side. I look at the West and almost just kind of feel bad for the guys over there because, again, you look at those guys and you want to have optimism, but, you know, they all have to play Alabama. They all got to go through Tuscaloosa. So it's tough to be optimistic in the sense of, you know, can they realistically win a championship, get to Atlanta, whatever. But, you know, I think Mississippi State will have enough to get back to a bowl, possibly 7-5, maybe 8-4 probably being the ceiling. But, yeah, I think it's still Joe Moorhead's building. Mississippi State, the proud program, they do have some, they've got tradition. They've got a, you know, proud fan base, similar to South Carolina does. And I do think they've got a freshman quarterback people should really keep an eye on. I think he's going to be a real difference maker.
Chris, kind of along those lines with the quarterback situation, I definitely would agree with those folks because you look at what they did last year when they were facing mediocre or below-average defenses like Ole Miss. They torched them, but then Fitzgerald, his inability to throw the ball consistently well, they had games against the likes of Florida and Kentucky and then a couple others that were the top opponents on their schedule over a 4 weeks. Maybe it wasn't a 4 week span, but those four games, they scored a combined 16 points.
Yeah, I mean, definitely last year for Mississippi State was a huge disappointment, especially when you go back and look. I mean, even I forgot just how many guys they had taken in the NFL draft and all the talent they had, especially on the defensive side of the ball and Fitzgerald. They were a team that was very hyped up last year, similar to how South Carolina was. I mean, I think a lot of people, Mississippi State was sort of the hot pick to take out Alabama, and they did not meet those expectations at all. So I think it's, I could say sort of the same thing about Will Muschamp or Joe Moorhead. I think the verdict is certainly still out on him. I think, I'll be honest with you, I don't know that we're going to see a lot of patience in Starkville because, you know, those fans with a disappointing year last year, I think if something happens and you see Mississippi State miss out on a bowl game, I think going into year three, the seat will start to get pretty warm for Joe Moorhead. So it'll be a very interesting season in Starkville, no doubt.
And no doubt with so you have Georgia and Alabama again. Is that the SEC championship for you?
Yeah, it's going to be Georgia Alabama again, I think. And I'm not going to pick against Alabama, guys. I mean, I just don't think it's smart to pick against Alabama until Georgia shows it can go into that big game and win. I mean, we've just seen the Bulldogs find maddening ways to lose those games. I mean, last year with the Jalen Hurts thing, until we see otherwise, I'm going to go with Alabama. I know it's a boring pick, and just like picking Alabama and Clemson in the college football playoffs, a boring pick. I know everybody hopes it doesn't happen, including me. But I think until we see otherwise, those are the teams. Those are the teams to beat until somebody steps up and beat them. And I really do think Georgia could, but until they do it, I'm going to pick the Crimson Tide.
All right, Chris, and before we let you go, how can we find out more about your show and obviously all the articles and everything?
Yeah, so our website, thespursupshow.com, great way to find us. We're also on all social media outlets, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Just look up the Spurs Up Show, where our podcast can be found on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, Buzzsprout, basically anywhere and everywhere you can find podcasts. We also do Periscope videos that are really popular during the season, if you will, little weekly video series called The Daily Crow that's on all our social media channels, as well as we have a YouTube page, a Snapchat. So we're kind of all over, but really to put a central location, either the website, thespursupshow.com, or like I said, any of those social media outlets is where you can find me and find all the content we produce. Really, really good stuff. We put up shows twice a week and have a special guest on each time. So,
great stuff. I appreciate the visit, man, and hopefully you won't be a stranger. Love to have you back, certainly, as we get ready for football season.
Absolutely. I would love to come back on. Love talking football. And, again, I know just like everyone else, we're all counting down the days. Can't wait for it.
Thank you very much, Chris. Appreciate you very much. Spent a lot of time with us. And he thinks that it comes down to money, which it probably does. And he likes – I think there's a lot of – to be fair, there's a lot of South Carolina fans that like us. And I just want them to come play. All I will say is I have nothing against South Carolina or the Gamecocks. My biggest thing is just come play us in Greenville. You played us in Greenville before and play us in Greenville now. And honor your word that you're going to – instead of buying out games, honest your word that you're going to play us. So I say that too nicely. I just want to have the Gamecocks be in Dowdy Ficklin.
No, I agree, and I think you. I think you're going to have, if it comes down to it. I think I think Gilbert's going to have to put his foot down. If
Ray Tanner.
Yeah, if Tanner. I'm trying to plug my phone in here, guys, to charge it, so I'm halfway distracted, but. If Ray Tanner starts talking about wanting to buy that game out, Gilbert's just going to have to put his foot down and say, look, we're not going to accept the buyout. You know, the game's got to be played.
Yeah.
I wouldn't take a buyout. I wouldn't take moving it to Charlotte. They either need to come to Greenville or forfeit the game.
Yeah.
They win by forfeit.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes not politics aside, but sometimes you have to play hardball. Especially, it's not being a jerk; it's standing up for your program. And people in Pirate Nation will really love—they already love John Gilbert—but to take that stance would be in our best interest, not only us but also the Group of Five, because we've got to stand up for what's right. And I hate that term; we're Division One. And you know, guys, if you think about it, look at a Pat Dye. Pat Dye was the reason why we're Division One, and for us to fold like an old card table is terrible when you think about a guy like Pat Dye, and the legend of Pat Dye brought us to the modern day era, Division One football, and we are Division One. So this mess of trying to treat us like we're FCS, and I'm not anti-FCS, I love it, but we are Division One. We should be treated like Division One, and I think it's going to take a group of five athletic directors need to get together. And Kyle, I know you said this before, it's probably going to come down to legal action against the other schools and the NCAA to acknowledge that we are Division One and that we deserve the same rights as the quote-unquote Power Five, which I can't stand.
Yeah, we are FBS, Division I FBS.
Right.
And, we're doing all the same things that the so-called Power Five is doing in terms of paying player stipends and things like that. So, we need to be treated the same. And in terms of these schools wanting to buy games out or whatever, I think Holland let them move it the first time because he genuinely thought they were coming later. Then they moved it again. Then, Captain Moron, Jeff Confer, let them move it again. And now, or buy it out or whatever they did. And now we're going there again next year, and they're supposed to come here in 21. And they better. That's all I'm saying is they better. I'll tell you what, if they don't come in 21, we better not set foot in Columbia ever again.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with that.
Yeah, I do too, because that it's your word. And there's no animosity. The thing about it, there's no animosity with Columbia, with the University of South Carolina.
Not right now. Not yet, but there could be.
No, I'm just saying, what I'm saying is there's not a reason why the game would be bought out other than, I guess, money. They want to have a home game. But guess what? We want to have home games too.
Exactly.
And we deserve to have those home games. And it's great relationships when you can – if you're South Carolina and you can drive a handful of hours and you're there at the opponent, that's a lot better than having to go to Missouri or some of the other places where – I know South Carolina has a lot of money. I'm not saying they don't. I'm just saying it's nice for the fans.
All right.
What?
No, I think the game will get played this time. I do. I think I, you know, and that's something that's something we need to talk to Gilbert about. We need to have him on the podcast again and ask him, to make sure he's aware of the situations where the game's been bought out in the past, and that Pirate Nation fully expects South Carolina to be in Dowdy Ficklin in 2021.
Right. They have been definitely, if you're a wrestling fan, you know what a baby face and a heel is. Jeff Confer was a heel. You bring in Ryan Robinson and Jock, they have been baby faces, and that's one of the ways they'll stay a baby face is if they fight for Pirate Nation and simply just do what's right. That's the reason why they've been so successful, is they've been doing what's right. That's the key. So anyway.
Absolutely. I muted my phone. I apologize.
To Bubba, you're alive?
No, they're doing a good job, and we just need to make sure that I'd like to get Gilbert's reaction. I'd like to ask John what he would do if he was asked by South Carolina to move that game again, or either for it to be balled out. I'd like to know how he would react to that.
Yeah, no doubt. So anyway, we're coming to. We're going to have a lot of, I want to tell people, we're going to have a lot of content this summer. You want to talk about our summer programming, so let's promote it. Let's go ahead and get some of the things people have already heard and maybe they haven't heard. We're excited about, Kyle and I had an idea before Bubba joined us full-time for the podcast and officially a part of the team for the watch party, where we're going to take classic games and we get former players to watch the game with us on YouTube. And you can watch along with us, and we're going to be doing six of those games this year. This summer, before football season, we'll have six episodes. It's kind of like television, how they have six episodes, Kyle, which is ridiculous as a a season. Well, we're trying to fit in a whole bunch of stuff, and so we feel like quality is better than quantity, and we've got people lined up, ready to go, so we'll be working on that this summer. I know, guys, with the Pirate Cruise, we were talking about the last podcast, very excited. We're going to make some announcements soon on that. We know that it's going to be July of 2020. We want to make sure it's before football season and fall camp and all that kind of stuff. So we know it'll be July of 2020 from Charleston to the Bahamas. We're working out the itinerary of 4 or 5 days. We'll know that. So we're trying to give folks in the Pirate Nation a way to go on a cruise, a nice vacation, a whole bunch of Pirate fans being together, maybe some former players, we're working all that kind of stuff out. I know that, Bubba, one of the things that we were talking about that all three of us came up with is 50 great Pirates in 50 days, right?
Yeah, 50 Pirates in 50 days, and we'll talk to former players and coaches from a variety of eras. And so that will be from July 12th up until the day before game day, August 30th. So stay tuned for that. That will be a SoundCloud exclusive.
All right, and I'm going to make a executive decision. I'm going to go ahead and announce our big announcement because I want people to be excited about it. Guys, we've been waiting, since the beginning of the year we've had this idea. Last year we had the idea of we'll have another event July 27th. We'll be talking about that at O'Cool's. But we've had a nostalgia party that Kyle and I have been working on since the beginning of 2018, and we had it obviously then. Well, this year we have another idea we're going to have that we started out the beginning of the year. And, guys, I want to tell you, for listeners right now, starting next month, we're going to have a show every Friday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., and it's going to be taking place. I just got the final word today, so we'll go ahead and announce it now. Giddy Up Coffee House in Williamston. It used to be an old KFC, and they've remodeled it. They have two locations, excellent coffee. We're going to be there. We're going to have a lot of guests come in, a lot of people locally. Maybe if you're not local, you want to come by and drink coffee and talk football. Guys, I want to just go ahead. I'm so excited about it, and go ahead and make the announcement now.
Yeah, coming up Friday morning football. Like you said, at Giddy Up Coffee House, it'll be a lot of fun. Dave will be there live in person. Bubba and I will be joining him by phone, or either pre-recorded segments or a combination of the two. I should be some Fridays where I can be there in person too, few and far between. But it should be a lot of fun.
It's going to be exciting, and we've already had a lot of people, guests, that have said that they would do it, so we're not going to put those out yet. We'll keep those a secret. We'll keep that part a secret and other things that we're going to do with it, but I think that Pirate Nation wants a it's getting you ready for college football season. That's why we're starting it next month to do previews, and we're all ready for Pirate Nation, are ready for the new season with Mike Houston, and so it'll be a whole bunch of different guests and different topics, a lot of fun. You never know what's going to happen. It's a live broadcast, so that's going to be fun. I'm really excited about it. Bubba, are you awake? Are you excited about it?
Yeah, we'll talk football on all three levels. In addition to talking East Carolina football, we'll talk to area high school coaches, and then we'll also talk to some from the western part of the state out my way. And we'll also have some pro football analysts, beat writers, and those sorts of things to talk about the Panthers, Redskins, what have you.
Very excited about it. We're going to have a lot of fun. And I tell you what, we're going to be having fun every Friday morning. Again, it's Giddy Up Coffee House, the Williamston location. We have another great location if you're in Washington. We have a lot of great friends in Washington. So please go and support them. They stepped up for us and allowed us to be there. We're going to be there having fun. We appreciate them stepping up and allowing us to do it and supporting us. So we have a great venue where you can come drink coffee, talk football. If you can't be there, we're going to have recorded. So we talked about the recorded segments. We're also going to have a chance for Pirate Nation to call in. Or maybe if you're a fan of a different team than the Pirates, you can call in as well. Some big matchups, you give your thoughts. Or who knows what the storylines are going to be for the Pirates or for college football. So we'll be doing that. And let's see what else, guys. We mentioned about July 27th. We got an next event at O'Cool's. Huge summer. Thank you, Pirate Nation, all the people, the Sports Objective Nation, we were talking about the beginning of it. It's just amazing. We could have one of our biggest months ever. We did last month, and last month looks like the record's going to be shattered again for the biggest month in 2019, right, Bubba?
Yeah, certainly looking that way. Tomorrow we'll be halfway through the month of June, and we're on pace for more than 5,000 listens. So,
and also
thank you so much, and we'll tell you a little bit later on all the different ways that you can listen.
Yeah, and by the way, Kyle, we actually have it. We actually are going to break sometime in the next day or two the record for most listens in a year. We already are going to be surpassing 2018. Granted, we started in March, and we really didn't get the throttle going as far as the full team until July. Kyle's been with me since literally day one. But as far as all the podcasts we had going on, we had maybe one podcast a week back then or two at the most. So the numbers are going to be better for that. But again, it's because of you, and we don't spend enough time thanking the listeners, Sports Objective Nation, most of us Pirate Nation, but we do have people that are in Tar Heel Nation and different ones that listen to our podcast. So we want to thank all of them for listening. Now, Bubba, do you want to tell folks where they can find us?
Yeah, you can listen to our show on YouTube, and then also in addition to listening to our show on YouTube, we have a lot of other content on there as well, videos of the Dowdy Ficklin Southside Project and so on. We also have TuneIn Radio where you can listen, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play Music, you name it. If you just simply going to your podcast app on your iPhone and listen to our show. You also follow us on social media at the Sports OBJ on Twitter, at the Sports Objective on Instagram, and also like and follow us on Facebook.
A lot of great stuff, guys. Do you have any final thoughts before we go?
No, not really. Hey, thank everybody for listening, and keep listening.
What about you, Bubba?
No, just thank you so much for tuning in, and we promise you we have an awful lot of good content headed your way in the coming months.
It's going to be a busy time, but a lot of times when other places, we'll just say it like this, when other places are kind of like coasting through the summer, that's when we're going to hit the gas. That's when we're going to We realize that you guys are like us, where you want more content. You want to know what's going on with your football teams. You want to know what's going on, period. And so there is no off season with the Sports Objective. I can promise you that. All right, guys, we're going to put this podcast to bed. For Kyle from LaGrange Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.